Johnson saw in the attempt by the Congress to force upon him various laws an attempt to overtake the executive by the legislative branch. Congress passed a law by which Johnson could not remove cabinet members who had been appointed with the consent of the Senate without their approval. There was an attempt to channel all orders, military by Johnson, through a commander-in-chief, General Grant, stationed in Washington. That, too, seemed to Johnson to be an attempt to subject the civilian power to the power of the military. So he resisted these. He broke these laws. And he was brought up and impeached. It was a highly political issue, and it takes us back to Alexander Hamilton and the Federalist, who says that impeachment is a political process. It is not necessarily a legal issue. The president doesn't really have to be responsible for definable felonies. It is a political issue. Is he abusing his power? And by a very small number of votes, Johnson, who had been impeached, was not removed from office. And so these three great amendments would represent the powerful movement of abolition to give to black Americans true freedom and equality, to allow them to vote, to prevent states from denying them their civil liberties. But this promise would not be fulfilled. And the retrograde movement that would characterize the United States in the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century, that retrograde movement that would deny blacks so many of the rights won by the American Civil War, is linked and was part of what was called the progressive movement, and was embodied in the policies and views of two of our strongest and indeed greatest presidents, Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson. The situation at the end of the 19th century very much reminds us of our own situation today. It was a time of great prosperity. It was a time of enormous wealth concentrated in a fairly small percentage of the American population, but families like the Rockefellers enjoyed a wealth that would have dazzled an Oriental potentate. It was a time of deep concern about the effectiveness of our form of government. Congress seemed to be in the hands, indeed was in the hands, of vested interest. Elections were all but openly bought and sold. Congress seemed to have reached a nadir in terms of its intellect and moral integrity. But out of that despair came new forces of progress that would lead to the election of Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson, these progressive forces. They were forces that believed in democracy, and part of the progressive movement was a desire to have initiatives, that is to say, for the people themselves to put forth laws, to have these passed by a referendum, to have recall of elected, and in some cases even appointed officials, to have the direct election of senators. And that would bring about the 17th Amendment, providing for the direct election of senators. And it would also be for a redistribution, or at least a greater equalization of wealth in the country by a progressive income tax, an idea that had been ruled unconstitutional, but a constitutional amendment, the 16th, passed in 1913, just like the direct election of senators, would provide for an income tax. And it believed in strong presidents. It believed in the ability of the federal government to carry out reform. And part of the progressive ideas was the Interstate Commerce Commission, passed in 1887. The first of these federal agencies, which would clearly violate the intent of the founders by blending legislative, judicial, and executive authority. The Interstate Commerce Commission, like all the more recent federal agencies, can indeed make regulations which have the force of law. It then executes, puts into action these regulations, and then can hold hearings, collect evidence, all of which is a judicial power. But this movement towards greater federal involvement was central to the progressive movement. And Theodore Roosevelt, embodied its ideas of progress and vigor.